For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says he's considering a raft of military and economic options in response to the independence referendum held by the Kurdistan region of Iraq. He says the vote on Monday amounts to treachery and says Kurds in Iraq may go hungry due to some of the punitive measures he's now considering. Kurdish leaders believe a yes vote will give them a mandate to start secession negotiations with Baghdad. UK Prime Minister Theresa May has been meeting European Council President Donald Tusk in London, hoping to start progress towards trade talks. The discussions at Downing Street come after Mrs. May set out plans for a 2-year transition period after Britain leaves the EU. She hopes to convince Donald Tusk and other European leaders enough progress is being made in Brexit talks in Brussels to start trade discussions after a crucial European Council meeting in October. Shadow Brexit Minister Labour's Keir Starmer says a transition might need to be longer than 2 years.
It is a temporary set of arrangements and therefore it really should be as short as possible. But let's not rush it. What we're trying to get is a deal that will endure and last for decades. Businesses don't want uncertainty, but what I don't want is it rushed. And if it takes more than 2 years to get it right, then I'm in the business of getting it right.
The Pentagon says North Korea needs to end its provocative actions in the Korean Peninsula or else President Trump will be presented with military options to strike Pyongyang. The move comes after the North Korean foreign minister said President Trump's latest threats amounted to a declaration of war. US correspondent Simon Marks reports from Washington.
The White House says despite President Trump's increasingly heated rhetoric, his administration is seeking a peaceful way out of the confrontation with North Korea. Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
We continue to seek the peaceful denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
But with the North Koreans now threatening to shoot down U.S. Air Force jets as a result of President Trump's latest Twitter threats to destroy the country, the Pentagon says military planning is underway for a possible U.S. strike.
A man alleged to be one of ISIS's leading figures in Germany's gone on trial on charges of supporting a foreign terrorist organization. Authorities say the Iraqi national and his 4 co-defendants recruited people to fight in Syria. Ira Spitzer reports from FSN Berlin.
The 33-year-old Iraqi known as Abu Walla was arrested last November and is accused of running a network in Germany devoted to supporting the Islamic State. He preached in several mosques known for extremist viewpoints and spread his messages online. The trial in the town of Celle may shed light on the shadowy world of ISIS recruitment in Germany, as an informant played a key role in gathering the state's evidence. The men are accused of providing logistical and financial support to smuggle fighters into Syria. Ira Spitzer, Berlin.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks, Ollie Barrett. It's approaching 3 minutes past the hour for Tuesday, September 26th, 2017. This is the Richie Allen Show. It's been a lovely day in Manchester today. Bit of an autumn. What do they call it? An Indian summer. Yeah, it's an Indian summer. That's what you call it. Got a great show lined up for you. Tweet at Richie Allen Show right now if you'd like to contribute. If there's something you'd like to tell me, it's at Richie Allen Show. Do it now. Welcome to the programme.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, coming up in the first hour, the Israeli-born author and activist Mikko Peled returns to the programme. He's been making headlines today across the UK, national and commercial radio talking about him. He appeared at an event organised by the Free Speech on Israel group yesterday. And that group met to discuss plans the Labour Party has to prevent or stop or rid itself of anti-Semitism. So Mikko Peled, the son of an Israeli general, author and activist, spoke at that event yesterday. He's been called a Holocaust denier and a racist today across UK media. Why? Well, he'll tell us pretty shortly what happened and what went on. Everybody and anybody has had an opinion on this today. Mikko Paled returns to the programme this hour. And in the second hour, the journalist John Rappaport is back. I was due to be speaking with Joanna Williams, PhD, and she was going to talk about identity politics and narcissism and much more besides. But her young daughter, sadly, had an accident at a gym class today and hurt her arm badly and needed an operation this afternoon. So Joanna couldn't make it. We send her best wishes and a speedy recovery to her daughter. And we will get her on the programme when it's convenient for her in the very near future. John Rappaport has a lot to say about Donald Trump's rows with the NFL and the NBA, LeBron James, the Dallas Cowboys, North Korea, much more besides as well. So we'll have an interesting chat with John Rappaport, who's not been on the programme for a long time, so he joins us in hour two. We're live on davidicke.com, bookmark davidicke.com/headlines, TuneIn Radio, fabradiointernational.com, and of course, richieallen.co.uk. So the Labour Party annual conference is in Brighton. It continues. As far as I know, the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, will address it tomorrow, late this afternoon. We heard from the deputy leader, Tom Watson. Now, the shadow chancellor, John McDonnell, who has spoken to conference, he's the man, if you're not living in the UK, you wonder about these terms. The shadow chancellor, in the event Labour returns to government, he would be responsible for the economy. Okay? So the shadow chancellor is John McDonnell. Every government cabinet position has a shadow. It's John McDonnell. Philip Hammond is the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Now, yesterday, the shadow chancellor, John McDonnell, addressed a fringe event yesterday, and he said that Labour were making plans to deal with market manipulation and a run on the pound should they return to government. Basically, things might happen if Labour formed a government. Things might happen to discredit them and to crash the economy. So basically he's saying if we get in, the banks, the stock market managers, those opposed to the nationalisation of rail, water and electricity, they would try and wreck the economy to hurt and discredit the new government. This is what McDonnell said at this fringe event yesterday. Listen up.
And we've got a scenario plan for those, and that's exactly what we're doing at the moment, bringing the relevant expertise together at every level to talk through what happens if there's such and such a reaction, what if there is a run on the pound, what happens if there is this concept of capital flight. I don't think there will, but you never know, so we've got a scenario plan for that. So as exactly as Paul has said, people want to know we're ready, and they want to know we've got a response to anything that could happen. Because if we can demonstrate that, that will calm things down as well, because they'll know have a reaction, you know.
Now, speaking at the very same event, former Channel 4 journalist and alleged economist Paul Mason said there would be Stalingrad-type attacks on Labour in the first 6 months of a Corbyn-led government. So these guys are saying, if we get in, the deep state, the market forces, the money men, the elite are going to come after us financially. So what did Corbyn say? Well, here he is. I should say Jeremy Corbyn. I've got to be correct. I've got to be professional. What did the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, say to what McDonnell said? Well, he was in conversation, Corbyn, today, with the BBC's Laura Koonsberg. This is how that went, and this is very interesting.
John McDonnell also said, you have to be prepared for what happens when or if they come for us. Who are they?
I think they're people that John probably doesn't like. I'm not quite sure who he's referring to there. I haven't actually spoken to him this morning, but I think he's looking back again at the experience of the past Labour governments, that both of the Wilson governments had problems about that, and I just think we need to look at all these scenarios. But listen, we want to lead a government that would reduce inequality, that would invest in the future, and I've met with, and John has many times, the CBI, Federation of Small Businesses, visit a lot of the private sector and talk to them about their investment plans and investment strategies. And do you know what? Those conversations go in a very positive way, because they want to see a government that's working for economic improvement.
Are you comfortable with him talking like that? You say he's talking about people he doesn't like. He would be your chancellor. He's your closest political ally. You've worked alongside each other for decades.
Look, John
and he's
has...
sounding like you're approaching getting into government like some kind of war where people you don't like might come and attack you. Isn't wanting to lead a country about trying to bring people together?
It is about bringing people together, but it is about changing the terms of the agenda.
Changing the terms of the agenda, said Corbyn. Alarm bells went off in all the system-controlled media when McDonnell said what he said. So it has to be slapped down. McDonnell is being called aggressive and anti-business today. And you heard the sneering Laura Koonsberg of the BBC. Who are they? Now, Corbyn could have told her. He could have told her who they are. But I suppose fat chance of that ever happening. The truth is, if you really did take rail, gas and electric even, the Royal Mail and water, if you took all of those things back into public ownership, you'd expect the establishment or the deep state to react. The corporatocracy, right? Of course they would. Just look at Venezuela as one example. Corbyn knows a lot about Venezuela. So causing chaos is easy. Listen back to this programme. We've had investment banker and trader Mads Paulsvig on the show, who explained how easy it is to decimate a currency by even 8, 10, 15, 20 points by making bets and moving money around. In fact, they did it after we voted to leave the European Union to punish us and to make their point that there would be an effect. There would be a reaction to us leaving the European Union. So why not tell the truth? Why tell half-truths? Why doesn't John McDonnell, who's, let's be honest, clearly three steps further down the rabbit hole than Corbyn, why not go all the way? Why not use the media spotlight at this conference to tell the nation what's really going on? Tell them about banks creating money out of thin air. Tell them we've borrowed money at interest from the Bank of England to fund public services for years and years and years, which has meant that we've had one bust after boom, boom to bust, boom to bust, boom to bust, everyone getting worse, each bust worse than the one that preceded it, as it was meant to. Seeing wealth concentrated in the hands of fewer and fewer people. And of course, real wealth, we don't mean money. Money is worthless. Land, utilities, of course. The same people who have been responsible for this have control of the media so they can hide this in plain sight. This agenda, and this is why the BBC and Sky are ridiculing McDonnell today. And they are ridiculing him. They've been painting him today as some sort of mad, paranoid, delusional, eccentric. So I would say to John McDonnell, if I ever got the chance to, if you're going to say that malevolent forces are going to make it difficult and make it look like Labour have wrecked the economy, why not finish the story? Why stop there? But politics is a farce. Take Dennis Skinner. Many listeners to this programme who live in the UK would have a lot of time for Dennis Skinner. They would like him. And you'd have to admire the man. You'd have to admire his integrity. Always anti-EU, always pro-justice for everybody, black, white, Asian, Hispanic. Decency personified, I would say, Dennis Skinner. But he's a system man to the bone. Listen to Skinner give advice to young Labour activists and MPs. Listen to him give them advice on what to say when their opponents ask them, how will you pay for everything you want to do in government? This is Skinner's advice.
And if anybody says to you, where's the money coming from, I'll tell you. They used to ask Nye Bevan that when he was building a National Health Service and building all those council houses and getting rid of the vandalism that had been caused prior to the Second World War. The country was skint. And yet somehow or other, Nye Bevan had an answer. He says, we're going to borrow it. And that's what you do. And make a comparison with the private sector. When the private sector expands, where do you think they get the money from? They borrow it. and they don't take it out of their own safe when Tesco's expand. Do you think for a minute they go to a Tesco safe and get the money out? Of course they don't. They go in somebody else's safe. They borrow the money.
Massive cheers from the Labour faithful in the hall. And he went on to say, as I mentioned already, when people ask you in Westminster, the MPs, how will you pay? You say, we'll borrow it like Tesco. We'll borrow it like the private sector. We'll borrow from the Bank of England. More billions. And you know, guys like Dennis Skinner might try and do right by working people. They might try and do some decent things for the poor and for those who can't look after themselves and for senior citizens. I have no doubt, because Dennis Skinner's an all right bloke. But you'll be out of power after a while. And even if you're not out of power after a while, the Bank of England and its bosses at the ECB and the IMF, they will want their money back. But it can't be paid back, because the principle was created, the phantom loan given to you to pursue your programme of government, but the interest never was created. More austerity follows then, doesn't it? Inevitably. Well, we're going to have bail-ins. We're going to have to take money out of your account to pay because you benefited from all of this spending and it can't be paid back, so we're going to have austerity. And that's what's going on. You know, amazing to see, not so amazing to see McDonald talk about dark forces wrecking the economy, devaluing the pound deliberately if Labour get in. But go a little bit further, McDonald, and tell the truth. But they won't. More madness. We're never leaving the European Union. Never. You can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. We've said this for a while. We all warned you. This show, davidicke.com, everybody associated with it said, look, they're not going to allow it. The vote was a great thing. It was very positive. But European Council President Donald Tusk was in Downing Street today, meeting with Theresa May, and he said not enough progress has been made to move on to the next phase of Brexit talks. He said Theresa May's realistic speech on Friday showed the UK's philosophy of having cake and eating it is finally coming to an end. He said there isn't sufficient progress. He went on to say, no one will ever tell me that Brexit is a good thing because, as I have always said, Brexit is about damage control, and I didn't change my opinion. I feel now we will discuss our future relations with the UK once there is so-called sufficient progress. The two sides are working, he said, and we will work hard at it. But if you ask me, and if today member states ask me, I would say there isn't sufficient progress yet, but we will work on it. Donald Tusk, the European Council president. A lot of other things I could tell you about him, but I'm not going to. Delay, 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 delay. Keir Starmer, the shadow Brexit secretary, said the transition period after March 2019 might need to be a lot longer than 2 years. We're going nowhere. So what's Jeremy been talking about today? Or what has he been saying, Jeremy Corbyn, about Brexit and about what Labour's real position is on it? Well, he's been speaking to many journalists today, including Sky News' Faisal Islam. And Corbyn wouldn't rule out the UK staying a member of the European Economic Area. Have a listen.
But then there'd be nothing wrong with explaining some of your Brexit red lines as well, which is the biggest decision facing us in the next few months. We're going to leave the single market, but could we rejoin the EEA?
What we've said is that we want to make sure there is a tariff-free access to the single market.
But you don't rule out that we could rejoin the EEA. And I know you're not aiming for it, but we could.
Listen, we're looking at all of that, but the point is there was a referendum last year that came to a decision. There is a need to protect jobs, crucially, and there's a need not to go down what seems to be the Boris Johnson, David Davis route of a sort of lower tax type economy on the shores of Europe.
Mayor of London has just said that it's a possible scenario that the next Labour manifesto, if the Brexit negotiations go badly, could include a referendum on the exit deal.
We're not planning any referendum. Sadiq is obviously thinking through all scenarios and possibilities. He represents a city that's overwhelmingly voted for Remain. We think that our strategy of trade access with Europe, guaranteeing the rights of EU nationals and protecting those rights and conditions that we've got from European membership should continue.
Lovely. Corbyn wouldn't rule out the UK staying a member of the European Economic Area, meaning you're not leaving the European Union. Tariff-free access to the single market, he said, for the, I reckon, for the 10,000th time over the last year. But that means free movement of people, of course. Corbyn said he wants jobs. Well, he could start on day one, if he became Prime Minister, with reopening the UK's coastal waters again to the UK's fishermen and fisherwomen and fisher children. Because the spin-off industries alone would create tens of thousands of jobs in the UK's coastal areas. That's not an overestimation, by the way. If you do take back control of your coastal waters again, allow them to be fished responsibly by UK fishermen, fisherwomen, fisher children, fisher everybody, the spin-off industries will be massive. That's just one thing. One thing. But of course, we don't have journalists. We don't have a media to say to him, listen, what's all this jobs nonsense? It's obvious to anybody with a brain that the chances of you creating jobs are far greater outside of the European anti-competitive, anti-democratic union. Staggering stuff, this. Starmer saying we need to be way beyond 2 years, maybe. Corbyn himself has said this on the Andrew Marr show on Sunday. We brought you that on Sunday View. You can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. It's 21 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. We're live on Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio as well. By the way, I've only covered one story, really. There is a lot happening. There is news in Ireland about a referendum on abortion scheduled for Ireland next year. Hillary Clinton has been talking. All of the stories that are covered in the mainstream media are covered on DavidIke.com/headlines, where you get the genuinely alternative point of view. Go to DavidIke.com/headlines. Bookmark it. We'll be back in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back. Just waiting for Mikko Paled to get all connected up there, and we will join him then. just to bring you up to speed on the story, in case you haven't been following it, today a significant rule change in the Labour Party brought into toughen Labour's stance on anti-Semitism, a rule change proposed by the Jewish Labour movement and backed by Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour National Executive Committee. This is in the news today because yesterday there was a fringe Labour event and there was a discussion about this rule change. And that fringe event was held by a group called the Free Speech on Israel. And they invited Mikko Poled to speak. At least I think they invited Mikko. He might have turned up. But he did speak. He's an author, of course, the son of an Israeli general, and he's an anti-Zionist activist as well. He's been on this programme several times before. He was there, and he called for free speech on every issue. That hasn't gone down well with UK media. So when we get Mikko on the line, which should be momentarily, we will speak to him about that. As usual, if you want to comment on that, if there's something you'd like to tell me about it, do tweet at Richie Allen Show. That's at Richie Allen Show. The best way to reach me is via Twitter because it's very quick. It couldn't be any simpler. So it is Tuesday, the 26th of September, 2017. This is your Richie Allen Show live on davidicke.com, fabradiointernational.com in Manchester. We're on TuneIn Radio as well, and the player is back working on richieallen.co.uk. Great to be with you this Tuesday. Don't forget, John Rappaport joins the programme in the second hour. Looking forward to catching up with him. It's been a long time. Before that, Mikko Poled joins us live. He's in the UK at present. And we'll talk about the commotion today in UK media about anti-Semitism. Back in three. Turtles, Can You Dig It, on the Richie Allen Show. 29 minutes, actually half past the hour for Tuesday. Mikko Paletta is not there yet. We'll give him a few minutes. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. The author and activist, the Israeli-born son of a former IDF general, has agreed to come on the programme. In fact, I've had several emails from him today. We've confirmed the time. He isn't there yet. Could be that he's rushing to a consul or to somewhere where he can do it in peace and quiet, but there isn't any sign of him just yet. I've also tweeted him and emailed him to ask him, where are you, basically. But he agreed to come on to talk about the articles in the papers today. Again, just to remind you, at a fringe event yesterday held by the Free Speech on Israel group, Mikko Paletta said, free speech, we should have free speech on every issue, whether it's about the Holocaust, yes or no, whether it's about Palestine, whether it's about justice, and so on, so on, so on. Now, this came about because Labour wants to change its own rules to toughen its own stance on anti-Semitism. Where's all this coming from? Well, it's going back several months. It's going back further than several months when various, not too many, but one or two Labour activists and Labour councillors said things that were construed as anti-Semitic. I think one councillor said something along the lines of, why doesn't America adopt Israel or take Israel, transplant Israel basically over to the United States of America? This was because I think that particular tweet was out of annoyance at the US support for Israel. Of course, there was nothing anti-Semitic about that or anything hateful about it. But a number of these things happened, and it was suggested by Zionists that anti-Semitism was endemic in the UK Labour Party. Now, I have no time for the Labour Party or the Conservative Party or anybody else. I have no interest in them. But you've got to have integrity as a presenter. You've got to tell the truth. There isn't any anti-Semitism. And when Ken Livingstone spoke out about Zionists in Germany and plans to relocate Jews to Palestine and that agreement that was in place there and everything else that Livingstone spoke about at that particular time, and this was seized upon by Zionists and by the Israeli lobby in the UK as evidence of anti-Semitism. There isn't any anti-Semitism. Now, the director of Liberty, or is she the former director of Liberty, Shami Chakrabarty, somebody else I don't have any time for, she sees racism everywhere. She's like, Cole. She's like Haley Joel Osment from The Sixth Sense. I see racism. It's everywhere. She's one of those, but she had a look into it and came back and said, no, there isn't any endemic hate for Jews in the Labour Party. However, the Labour Party is about to change its rules on anti-Semitism to toughen its stance. This is coming from the Jewish Labour movement, a rather interesting collective, by the way, something I was hoping to get into with Mikko Paletta. An interesting bunch of people, the Jewish Labour movement. And as I said, it was backed by Jeremy Corbyn and by the National Executive Committee of Labour. So, free speech enthusiasts, and there aren't too many of those left, not in politics anyway, even though they talk all the time about free speech and the importance of it, everything they do is the direct opposite of promoting free speech. But anyway, there was a fringe group. Now, the fringe events around party conferences are not organised by the political parties themselves. They're separate things. They're independent things. So at this fringe event, people spoke up. One of those people was Mikko Paletta, and he's been roundly criticised, called a self-hating Jew, called a Holocaust denier, and all the rest of it today. And that's why he was invited on the programme. He was invited on, he accepted, with gusto, and he's not here. And it's 25 minutes to the top of the hour. And if he's late, I'll be just as annoyed as if he's not there, because I need time to speak to him about these issues. And John Rappaport, God love him, I want to talk to him as well. So there you go. So I'm going to dial him up again on his mobile and see how we get on. In the meantime, there are tweets on this, and I will read those tweets when I come back. I've got email open as well. It's richie@richieallen.co.uk. That's the email address. This is a very serious issue here. Now, Mikko Puletta has tweeted several times today, and in fact, he emailed the Guardian newspaper to claim that he's never denied the Holocaust. That is preposterous to suggest that he's denied the Holocaust. He said, did Mikko Puletta, it's disgusting to deny the Holocaust. These people are cranks. They have no role in the mainstream of politics, and we certainly don't want them. I'm reading Tom Watson, excuse me. I'll read you Mikko Puletta's emails to The Guardian in a minute. Tom Watson said, the Labour deputy leader said, it's disgusting to deny the Holocaust. These people are cranks. They have no role in mainstream politics, and we don't want them in the Labour Party. Now, in the email sent to The Guardian, Mikko Puletta said that he was Jewish, but not a member of the Labour Party, obviously. He said, the Holocaust was a terrible crime that we must study and from which we must all learn. I reject the idea that Holocaust deniers, foolish as they may be, should be treated as criminals. And I doubt that supporters of Israel should be given the authority to judge who is or who is not racist and anti-Semitic. He went on to say, did Mikko, promoters of racist ideologies shouldn't be given a public platform. And to me, that does include people who promote Zionism, which is a racist ideology whose followers have committed and continue to commit crimes against the people of Palestine. If we are to do justice to the memory of the millions of victims of the Holocaust, Jewish and Roma, and many, many others, then we must engage in robust debate and education about the causes of current ongoing violence and injustice. So it's interesting that he said promoters of racist ideologies shouldn't be given a public platform, including Zionists, because Zionism is a racist ideology. See, I would disagree with Mikko there. And I was planning on saying to him, listen, I disagree with you. You can't be for free speech up to a point. You're either for free speech or you're not for free speech. Excuse me. I've interviewed people on this programme before. And let me have some water. Jesus, Richie. It's like a fly has gone down my throat. Hang on. Lovely. There was an old woman who swallowed a fly. But I believe in speaking to people, you know. If you meet genuine racists, what is a genuine racist? Does one exist? I think so. I think there are people, and I've met them, I've actually met people like this, who believe they are morally and intellectually superior to another ethnic group. They genuinely believe this. It's not just silly stereotypes about different people or different ethnic groups. I've met people who genuinely believe that, and they will present to you what they believe is historical evidence to prove that white men are intellectually superior than their African cousins or their Japanese or Chinese second cousins or whatever. There are people who believe that. But to deny them a platform, to deny them the opportunity to debate their ideas so that you can argue with them and shoot down their ideas, no. No, I wouldn't preclude them. I wouldn't preclude Zionists. We've interviewed Zionists on this programme, David Rubin most famously. We did it in London at TPV. Nobody more committed to the Zionist cause than the New Yorker who left New York and went to live in Palestine, believes in the settlements, David Rubin. Had him on with Gilad Atzmon, famous, well, not famously, but in terms of our little circle, it was one of those interviews that made us sit up and take notice. Let everybody have their say. And let logic, reason and the facts determine who wins the day. So I would argue with Mikko that you deny a public platform to Zionists or to genuine racists, if genuine racists exist. So I'm going to try and scare him up again. Is that a saying, is it? I think it's a saying, scare him up. See, can we do anything with that? In the meantime, here's some Bob Seger for you. On the Richie Allen Show. Let's hope we get Mikko Puletta, for Jesus' sake. I sit and listen to them by myself. Bob Seger, one of those I've never seen. I'd love to see Bob Seger. He's getting on a bit now. I don't think he's toured the UK for quite a while. In fact, when we came back to the UK from Spain a few years back, I think we might have just missed him. And I thought, I wonder, will he ever come back to the UK? Bob Seger, eh? Love Bob Seger. On my bucket list to see Bob Seger. Going to see Neil Diamond this weekend. And I'm very interested. I'm a huge Neil Diamond fan. And I have been for many years. And I make no apologies for it. There's a point at which you get... Say it for me. There's a point... There's an age you reach when you're no longer embarrassed by announcing your musical predilections. Right? And I'm at that age now. I'm looking forward to Neil Diamond because I love him. But it's at the arena. And back in May, of course, 22 people were killed at the arena when the Ariana Grande concert was finishing. A bomb went off. We're told it was a suicide bomber. We were told his name was Salman Abedi. I'm not being sarcastic. You just don't know what to believe. What we do know is people died. Young Mancunians, some of them children, died in the blast. And because the arena only opened a few days ago, I think, they've only had a couple of events since it opened. There was a big boxing night. There was a world title fight there on Saturday. But they've been sending out emails warning about the heightened levels of security. They've basically been saying security is much, 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 much tighter. And searches and all of that. Be prepared for delays getting into the venue. So I'll report on that on Monday after the concert on Sunday evening. Going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll go in a different direction. Looks like Mikko Paletta's done a runner.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Welcome back. Mikko Paletta is not joining us, it doesn't look like, tonight. I don't know why. There might be a good reason for it. I hope it's not because the good people at davidicke.com and David Icke himself, most notably, have been accused ludicrously of being a Holocaust denier and an anti-Semite by some of these Zionist groups. I hope that's not the reason that, in light of what he was accused of today, he decided late on not to come on. But I'm not saying that is the the case. I'm hoping it isn't. Listening in and hoping to hear Mikko Paled, and we won't talk any more about Mikko until we find out what's going on with him, is none other than my great mate and colleague David Icke himself. David, welcome.
Hello, Rich. I thought you might need a bit of help till the next guest comes on.
It's lovely to have a bit of help. I love the fact that you've come on. I'm not shy of prattling away to myself, but it's lovely to have somebody to talk to. Listen, forget about Mikko for a minute. Let me ask you this. I don't think I've ever asked you this in all the time I've known you. Is racism real? Are there people who hold genuine beliefs about the morality and the intellectual capacity of other ethnicities, in your experience?
Oh, yes, of course there are. We have 7.5 billion people on the planet, and therefore, if it's possible, it will be happening somewhere. So I don't have any doubt whatsoever. In fact, I've met them, where people do believe that they have a racial superiority. Where it starts to get more complicated is that the prevailing norm within this whole racist industry, which is what it is, has been that you have to be white to be a supremacist, a racial supremacist. You do not. This is the thing that really we need to get across in this madness that's happening, this calculated, manipulated madness. For instance, you don't have to be German to be a Nazi.
No.
Right? You don't have to be a German in the 1930s and 40s to be a Nazi. It is not a race. It is a state of mind. And that state of mind can manifest itself through any race. So any group of people who say, you cannot call us Nazi, you cannot say that any of us are Nazi, is basically trying to avoid basic common sense, that the Nazi mentality, the loving mentality, the something in between mentality, the greed mentality, the narcissistic mentality, the caring for others mentality, all of these things can manifest through any racial type. And we have this major, major problem with what I'll call groupthink. Now, when I say groupthink, most people will perceive that to be everyone thinking the same. And that is one expression of groupthink. But there's another expression of it, and that's where people think in groups. In other words, they don't see the individuality of people. They see only the group. And this is where you get the phrase like, it's the Jews, it's the Muslims, it's the Freemasons. And when anyone says it's the, what follows is always a nonsense. Because it's not, it's the anyone. What we're looking at is a mentality. And that mentality can express itself through any racial group. But if we think in groups, then you don't look at, say, Jewish people, given the topicality of it, and you don't look at what this person says and does, and what this person says and does, and what this person says and does, you say, it's the. And this groupthink manifests on both sides of the divide, if you like, because you've got some people saying, it's the Jews. And from the Zionist point of view, as we've had so much evidence of in recent times, you have them saying, you cannot say this about any of us. So both are expressions of groupthink, and both are nonsense.
Nonsense.
there are some lovely Jewish people. There are some caring Jewish people. There are people that absolutely vehemently oppose Zionism. What the manipulators want, whether it's the Jewish people example or the Muslim people example or the white people example, is to get people thinking in groups, because then you can play one group off against another group and you've got divide and rule. Once you enter the realms of intelligence instead of programming, you then start to see the individuals within those groups. There are Muslims that commit atrocious acts. There are Muslims, for goodness sake, that are manifesting as this ISIS group. And there are Muslims, which I've met actually in the Middle East as well as other parts of the world, are some of the kindest, nicest, loveliest people you'll ever meet in your life.
Yeah.
They'd give you anything, even though they've got nothing. So we have to break this, and it is manipulated, this manipulated programming where people see themselves as a group that cannot be collectively, therefore individually within the collectively, criticized in any way. And on the other side, people saying it's the group in its entirety. This is the perceptions of the perceptional state of madness. It's insane. And both of these group thinkers are playing their part in creating this world that we see now, where groups are being played off against each other again and again and again and again. And you see it everywhere you look now. It's like someone's pressed a button. This is the next stage. We're going to play them off against each other big time. So you take this Antifa and the sheep-like mentality that follows it and supports it.
Remind the listeners, David, who Antifa are, because a lot of people ask me,
yeah, Antifa are they call themselves a global a group, which is not actually an organization, but shares anti-fascist views, and they basically behave in a similar way around the world. But if you go deeper enough into Antifa, you'll find that the less than 1%, which those that support Antifa claim to despise, will actually be behind Antifa, because what is happening is exactly all this playing groups off against groups and races off against races. This is all part of the less than 1%, the hidden hands policy of massive global divide and rule. But so you take Antifa, and what they are doing is breaking up meetings by people they say they don't agree with in the United States, or other parts of the world as well. But the United States is very topical after what's happened at Charlottesville and beyond. Now, within some of these groups whose events they are breaking up and violently, will be some who will have an idea, a belief, staggeringly mistaken, that there is some kind of white supremacy racial type. And as I said to many people on the far right over the years, if you are the master race, I'm glad I'm bloody not. But because of this groupthink, everyone who doesn't agree with the Antifa program, because that's what it is a Nazi. People that go along and just have an event calling for freedom of speech is a Nazi. It's not, well, you're saying you're white supremacist and you're better than everyone else and you say this and you're, all that stuff. No, it's not seeing the individual behavior and seeing the individual view. It's labeling an entire group called white people having a meeting. White people who are not Antifa supporters, that is, as Nazi. And if you look at the transgender situation, the Muslim situation, the political correct situation in its entirety, it's all about playing different groups off against each other by perceiving all those groups as some kind of blob. Kind of blob mentality, instead of seeing the individuals and the individual behavior and the individual views within them and looking at them and realizing that actually it's not a blob. A lot of people who say this transgender agenda has got ridiculously out of hand are transgender people. I mean, people who look at some of the destruction of freedom of speech. You can't say that, you can't say that, you can't say that. Or people who you would think would be agreeing with it, but they're not. They're saying, well, look, I'm not offended by that. What's the problem? I don't feel there's a problem. The problem is being created, and it's being created by this groupthink. And if we do not start to have the maturity of looking at individual behavior and individual views, as opposed to treating everyone with a certain color skin or a certain religious background as one group who all think and act the same, then this divide and rule is going to create a catastrophe in terms of warring factions and upheaval. And the other thing is, you know, if someone comes at me with a machete, right? I might actually have a problem because I could be done some damage with a machete, right? But if someone comes at me with words, well, whether I'm affected by those words, it's not like a machete when it hits you. There are consequences. Words are a choice about whether you are affected by them or whether you are not. Being hurt, being offended is a choice. And, you know, I have to smile to myself recently where I'm being attacked and people trying to silence me for saying this, you can't say that, you upset this people, you're offending these people. When for the last nearly 30 years, I've lived my life in the face of ongoing ridicule and abuse. But because it's not directed at me because I'm a white male, then that's okay. You can do that. It's not a problem. It's not politically incorrect to give me decades of abuse and ridicule. And yet it should be according to political correctness. But from my point of view, I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn. Why? Because I've chosen not to care what people think of me. And along with this this groupthink program has come this other deeply connected program whereby everyone is being constantly encouraged to be offended by whatever anyone says about them that they don't like. And if we go on like this, it's the end of discourse. You know, when you've got people like Facebook and Google saying that we are going to treat as conspiracy theories and therefore suppress their circulation, anything that does not conform with accepted political and scientific fact, right? Just look back a few years, a few decades, a few centuries, and see what people believe to be political, social, and scientific fact, that through discourse and challenge and questioning were shown to be utter frickin' nonsense. But if you can't have this discourse because only this narrow band of acceptable opinion and view is allowed to circulate, then one of the expressions of it is not only that people lose freedom of speech, but that the human race regresses mentally, emotionally, and intellectually, because it can't grow because its current status quo perceptions can't be challenged. And so when Mikko Peled is talking today, I don't know what's happened to him, but talking today about let's just have discourse and let's have debate and see where we go. That's the way the human race has expanded its understanding since the human race was created.
Since the year dot, absolutely.
Once you stop that, first of all, you start to regress because the status quo is never challenged, so the status quo starts to solidify. But secondly, it means once you have a block, a censorship of open free discourse, it means that someone's deciding what discourse there can be and what discourse there can't be. And once you enter those realms, you're in a tyranny. Because that which is dictating what can be said and heard is going to do so on the basis of what benefits itself. And so we are really, Richie, now at this crossroads, this fork in the road now. And it's big time, and it's come on really quickly in the last little while.
Very quick.
Where we as a human race, as a consciousness beyond the human race, have got to decide if we are going to go on walking down this, actually walking backwards with our heads bowed, saying, yes, sir, no, sir, anything you say, sir, down this road to what would make Orwell wince where it's designed to end up, or whether we are actually going to stand up and say, no one is going to dictate to us what we think. No one's going to dictate to us what we say and what we discuss. Because if we allow that to happen, then not only will tyranny come, it in itself is a tyranny. And these people, whether they are Zionist zealots or Muslim zealots or any white supremacist zealots, whatever they are, they are all standing on the same mental and emotional ground, labeled staggering levels of arrogance. And also, I've never met anyone or observed anyone who wanted to silence others who didn't have something to hide. All the abuse that I've had for nearly 30 years, I don't want to censor any of them. I don't want to censor idiot journalists writing idiot things about me. I don't want to do that. Because once you start to censor what people can say, then you're starting again to walk down that road of tyranny. That doesn't mean there shouldn't be consequences for what people say, in the sense that if you are urging people into violence and urging people into beating someone up or burning a building full of people down, there are laws against that. And therefore, it needs to be dealt with.
Prosecute
That's a criminal
people.
Act.
Absolutely.
But to censor people actually speaking, let's just think about that. You are dictating to another human being what their vocal cords can manifest. What kind of ludicrous world is that? If people want to, you know, like I say, urge people into violence, there are laws against that to stop other people being hurt. But free speech itself, and you were right, it's a point I've made many times when you say about even Mikko Peled, I don't want to silence Zionists, Zionist zealots. I don't want to silence the campaign for anti-Semitism from telling their lies about me, because I can deal with that. I want the free flow of information, because then you are saying to humanity in general, be mature, get informed, make your own mind up what you make of what these people are saying. This person saying that, this person saying that, you decide. Not a censor saying you can hear this, but you can't hear that. Therefore, you're far more likely to believe what you hear rather than what you don't even know exists, because we're not letting you hear it. Let's hear all views and then let's make our own mind up. Because in the end, sanity will prevail if the free flow of information is allowed to proceed. Insanity and tyranny will prevail whenever freedom of expression is imposed upon.
Folks, you're listening to David Icke. Mikko Peled was supposed to be on the program today. We've not heard from Mikko. At this stage, I'm beginning to think that he made a decision at some stage this afternoon not to come on, because he hasn't been in touch. If something had happened, he would have been in touch, I reckon. I have communicated quickly with John Rappaport. John said he's happy to come on in 10 minutes, around 20 past the hour or so. He's happy to wait a few minutes. David jumped into the breach. Very important stuff, this.
Yeah, I don't want to take John's time, though.
Not at all. It's great to have you on. It's great that you jumped in to fill that void. And my listeners do hear too much of me, and I'm not joking when I say that. I get to do this every night of the week, and I get a good old say, and it's good to have that counterbalanced. It's really important what you're saying. It is really important. We dealt with Ofcom some years ago, and we were told, we were given reams of pages of documentation about what might be harmful. And when we looked at it, me, I, and one other person who's not going to be named on this programme again, we looked at all that documentation. And most of what's deemed as harmful isn't harmful to ordinary men and women from ethnicity A or ethnicity B. What they deem as harmful is harmful to the establishment. It's harmful to, in terms of people might actually find out who you guys really are. That's what they mean by harmful. That's my understanding of it today. You know, on my little journey of covering these issues, when people tell you that something is harmful, it's very rarely harmful to the group they claim it's harmful to. It's usually harmful to them. And Peled said something yesterday, which you couldn't not agree with, David. Let people say what it is they want to say. Let's not criminalise somebody saying that they don't think the Holocaust happened, or they don't think this happened or that happened or whatever. Let's vehemently disagree with them if that's our position and have an open debate about it. But let's not criminalise it. That's just common sense, that.
Criminalising someone having another version of history, even if their perception of history is fundamentally unsupportable, is, from my point of view, utterly ridiculous. And if they're point of their view of history is completely unsupportable, then evidence in the face of their view will make it very clear that their view of history is unsupportable, and that will be the end of the story. What we're looking at, I have been writing about this for quite a while. What we're looking at is a movie script. And the movie script is unfolding, and now, more than any other time, blatantly, freedom of expression, as we've reached that point on the script where freedom of expression is being targeted in the most extreme fashion, like never before. Wherever you look, you can't say this, you can't say that, you can't have that view, you can't have that opinion. And we need to see it for what it is. This is not something that's randomly happening. This is a script and an agenda to destroy freedom of expression. And it's not even a time where we are now that you can say, if we don't do something, then we'll lose freedom of expression. Freedom of expression, to a large extent, has already been lost. And most of it has been lost to the most insidious form of censorship, which is self-censorship. Once you have a view that is different to the tyranny, which is being policed to a very large extent by those that call themselves progressives. I'm talking about the non-liberal progressives that claim to be anti-fascist while acting in the very same ways that the fascists of Nazi Germany acted, which is to burn books and stop people speaking in public and to intimidate people who have a different view. That's how the Nazis acted in Germany, to stop their exposure. And that's what these so-called anti-Nazi progressives, non-liberal progressives, are doing today. So basically, we're seeing the same process and the same techniques couched in a different label, if you like. As I said, I think when we were talking sometime before, you know, if you want to bring in a fascist tyranny, then it's not a good idea, especially with what happened in the 1930s and 40s in Germany. It's not a good idea to do it through someone with a small mustache who's goose-stepping down the street with his arm in the air. You do it through groups that call themselves anti-Nazi.
Yeah.
And we again, this is another part of breaking down this groupthink program, is to not listen to words. Don't listen to what they say and what they say they stand for. Look at how they behave. And then you'll see what's really going on and what they're really about. And it's like that old phrase about, you know, if it quacks like a duck and it waddles like a duck and it's got feet like a duck, then it's a duck. And if it acts like fascist and it talks like fascist in terms of what it says you cannot say and you cannot do and you cannot meet even without facing violence, then it talks like a fascist, it waddles like a fascist, and it's got feet like a fascist. Let's call it what it is. It's fascism. And what political correctness is psychological fascism. And once people feel intimidated about speaking their truth, whether their truth is turns out to be factually right or not, it's their truth. It's their personal truth. Once they reach the point where they're intimidated into silence, well, we're not even having a debate now. We're not having a debate whether this person should be allowed to say this or why they shouldn't be allowed to say it. There's just no debate because they're just not saying it anymore. And this is where we're going. And everybody, and I hope some of them are listening to this program. There won't be many, but I hope some of them are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That if you get involved in a Twitter storm lambasting someone you don't agree with and calling them this, that, and the other, and threatening them as they do, then you are engaged in fascism. You are engaged in psychological fascism, intimidating people into silence through fear of the consequences of speaking their own truth and giving their own opinion. And don't tell me you're anti-fascist and this, that, the other, anti-Nazi. Don't give me that crap. You're acting like the Nazis did. And if you're afraid of the free flow of information, if you're afraid of someone having a different opinion to you, then you haven't got much confidence in your own opinion.
Do you know, we'll, thanks for doing this, for jumping in, by the way.
No problem.
I'd have asked you, but I know you work all day long. I know what your routine is. I'd have asked you, but I wouldn't be doing that to you because you work hard enough as it is. I'm going to give John a ring in 3 minutes. These themes David is discussing here are among the themes. See, the Irish can't say they're THs, but that could be, that might just be racism, or it could be true because we don't say our we don't pronounce our THs. But the themes in David's forthcoming book, there are several hugely important themes on this area. He's exploring in a way that I don't think has been done before. It's hugely important. There's no doubt about that. We'll be chatting for the Dot Connector podcast on Thursday, Friday this week. You're in Maastricht very soon. You're in You're everywhere, right?
I'm in Slovakia, and then we've got the book launches in November in Edinburgh. All the tickets have gone for that, and Manchester and London. It's a 3-course dinner and some music, and I'm going to speak and answer questions for 2 hours and talk Brilliant. About this new book, which even by my standards is absolutely explosive. Not just because of what's in it, but massively because of what's in it, but also because of the environment in which it's being published, the world we've been describing for the last half an hour. I think a lot of people, when it comes out, are going to be punching the air. All those people that self-censor because they're frightened of speaking their truth, they're going to be punching the air. And all those people that want to destroy freedom of speech in their arrogance are going to be taken to their beds and sipping sweet tea.
Fantastic.
I look forward to it.
It's going to be brilliant. Slovakia, Maastricht, that's coming up very soon. DavidIke.com, the World Wide Wake Up, .com as well for tickets. The speaking events, the one in Edinburgh is gone, but Manchester and London, find tickets for that. Going to be absolutely brilliant. And I can't wait for the book. Thanks for your thoughts on that, David. It's been brilliant. Really has been
Cheers,
brilliant.
Cheers, Rich. Thanks for Give jumping in. Give my best in. To John. It's a long time since I met John Rappaport. Back in the days when I had very long hair in California, when I was talking to nobody.
Less miles on the clock back then. He's, yeah, he's a really good guy, John. Yeah. He's not
give
been on for ages.
My best.
I will indeed. The first thing I'll say, thanks, mate. I'll talk to you real soon.
Cheers, Rich.
Cheers, David. Bye for now. Pretty great of David to do that, John. But he was listening, expecting to hear Mikko Puletti. He wanted to hear what Mikko had to say. And when he didn't show, he jumped into the void, into the breach, which is brilliant. Really important stuff, that. The book will be out soon. Stay in touch with davidike.com for that. I can't wait to read it. Right, we're going to take some music. When we come back from that, John Rappaport will join us. He's been talking a lot about Donald Trump and his row with the NFL even, and what John thinks is really going on there. I think it'll be fascinating. Let's get him on. While we get him on, we've got some music from Billy Ocean.
Going gets tough. The tough get going. Tough. When the going gets tough, the tough.
On the Richie Allen Show on davidike.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and TuneIn Radio. Our next guest doesn't need very much introduction at all. He's a brilliant journalist, and I've been lucky enough to have spoken to him many times in recent years. I've only known him a few years. He's written for everybody, and he's spoken, when I say he's written for everybody, he's written for some of the most well-read, widely read publications in the world. The LA Weekly, The Village Voice. He's appeared on television programs all over the United States and more. You can follow his blog. johnrappaport.wordpress.com, johnrappaport.wordpress.com, or No More Fake News, where he publishes insightful and thought-provoking articles on a daily basis. Just before we say hello to John, and it's been ages since he was on, it's good to have him back. The BBC reporting this evening that the US President Donald Trump has stepped up his criticism of NFL players who knelt during the national anthem over the weekend's games and Monday Night Football, speaking at a White House press conference with Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy. Trump said the NFL should ban the players from kneeling to stop them kneeling. It's called respect for our country, he says. Well, you won't be surprised that John Rappaport has a terrifically thought-provoking and challenging article, among other articles, about that, entitled Open Letter to NFL Players, You're Being Used. Try being politically incorrect if you want some real answers. John, welcome back. And first of all, thanks for your patience. I really appreciate it today. How are you?
Okay, good, Richie. Good to be here.
It's marvellous. David Icke was on the programme before you. The programme was a bit of a mess because we were due to speak to Mikko Paled about a big story in the UK today. He didn't make it. David jumped into the void. First thing he said, by the way, David, was to say hello to John Rappaport. He said it's been a long time since he first met you way back on the road when he had more hair. Well, he had longer hair. He's got plenty of hair. He had longer hair. And there was less.
Yeah, say hello to David for me too.
I will do. As far as I know, he'll be listening to this. So thanks for coming on. It's been a while and it's great to have you back on. johnrappaport.wordpress.com. There's so many ways you can think about this particular story, about racism, about social justice, about what Trump is doing. I read your articles today, including the one about immigration, which is, if we have time to, we'll get to it. On the NFL story, you think, and I think you've got a really good point here, that the players themselves really don't understand the issues. They don't know what's really going on and that they're just being used as pawns. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, that's what's happening. You've got to be able to think this thing through. You know, it takes a couple of steps, all right? It's not that hard, though. First of all the protests started around the issue of police brutality toward black people, shooting black people, and so on. One player, Colin Kaepernick, last year started this, and now it's growing. So now everything is focused on police brutality, oppression. And now it's really exploded into who knows how many other areas, the flag, the national anthem, patriotism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all over the place. But if these players actually want to stop and think and take a look about what is causing decades and decades and decades of destruction and decimation in black inner cities in America, if they really want to think about it, they're going to realize what the biggest issues are. And the biggest issue is not police brutality. In my article this morning, I cite numbers and figures to show, for example, how many times do police in various cities in America draw their weapons and use them versus how many violent gun crimes are committed in those cities by people other than police. And the ratio is ridiculous. I mean, the crime figures are through the roof. So these are the real issues that for decades and decades and decades have been destroying black communities and inner cities around America, for example.
These statistics are brilliant, by the way. And I cross-referenced some of these stats today, not because I don't believe you. I've known you a few years. Your integrity is unimpeachable. The figures are startling, and I've got them here in front of me. It's a drop in the ocean. And of course, you, the progressives, will say, well, you're just a crazy old racist. But that's what progressives do. But you're not saying that there are not some real problems with, you know, psychopaths wearing uniform. You've never said that. What you are saying is within these communities.
What I'm saying is, if you want to actually correct the problem, the many problems, then you've got to focus on such things as the following: street drugs, gangs, gang shootings, incredible lack of nutritional food in inner cities, heavy metals like lead in the water, landfills where pollutants, corporate pollutants, are dumped in those areas. Globalists stealing jobs and exporting them to other countries. These are some, just some, of the really huge absence of fathers in the homes. Gigantic. So it really all comes down to, if you want to actually solve these situations of decades in inner cities, you've got to focus on these things, not suddenly take everybody's attention and just put it on this idea of police brutality, oppressing us with police brutality, that as if that's the whole story, that's it. Because here's what the players are actually doing as unwitting dupes. They're yanking everybody's attention away from the real problems that must be solved if these communities are ever going to survive, onto this one issue that is not the main reason why these communities are in desperate trouble and have been for a very long time. So as the protests ramp up and the television coverage ramps up, and Trump starts talking the way he's talking, and the arguments go back and forth, and the press covers all of this, you know, from their point of view, their so-called liberal point of view. What's the upshot of the whole thing? The upshot is that we're getting further and further away from actually working solutions to the real problems, and more into this other area, which is called police brutality. That certainly exists, but it isn't the major reason why, not even close, why these communities are sinking and sinking and sinking. And by the way, if these players want to look at what I'm just talking about and really think about it, they should also think about the so-called war on poverty in America that started in 1966, launched by President Lyndon Johnson. Because since that time, by some estimates, $2 trillion, maybe even more, have been poured into America and, of course, inner cities to try to lift these communities up. Compare then and now. It's a hell of a lot worse now. What happened to all that money? Where did it go? Who stole it? Who diverted it?
Yeah.
Why were the programs not working? And ultimately, the bottom line on what I'm saying here is these NFL players who think they're doing the right thing are being used as dupes by a major, major covert globalist op that wants to keep these black communities as permanent, forever, underclass, where nothing is ever solved. And the only thing that happens is more and more dependence on the government. Why? Because that's the basic blueprint for globalist control of the planet, creating more and more and more permanent underclasses of people that have nothing in their lives except dependence on the government. That is the ultimate bottom line on this.
Yeah, you wrote that. You wrote that. It's a simple formula that's been used for forever across the world. If there are things that could be done to solve a chronic situation, a chronic problem, what the establishment does is highlight some other problem that won't lead to any solution at all. And if you focus on that, get in the high-profile celebrities to talk about that, nothing ever happens. The agenda rolls forward. And you have classic divide and conquer, because you have these groups that, and you know more about these groups than me, John. You've written a lot about them, Black Lives Matter and other groups, and we understand, you know, the likes of George Soros, they have their hands, their fingerprints all over these groups. You get classic divide and conquer identity politics, don't you? Us versus
absolutely,
them.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, that solves nothing. It only makes it worse. And then these idiot sports writers come along and they talk about, no, these protests are very important because they're actually initiating, and they love to use this phrase, a national dialogue on race. What are they talking about? Everybody in the United States is going to gather at some place all at once and start talking very sincerely to each other? That's total baloney. This is not starting any kind of a national dialogue. This is creating more polarization, more divide and conquer, more conflict, black against white, white against black. That's all it's doing. And as I said, and as you pointed out, you distract everybody from the real issues by pointing them in exactly the wrong direction, because you don't want to ever solve the problem. And then they all look over there and start, you know, yelling and shouting about what's happening over there, and nothing is going to change. So if these NFL players want to do something productive, they better start thinking about reality rather than the fantasy protests that they're involved with.
Just, I want to talk, because there are always some fantastically, as I said, thought-provoking pieces on your site. There's a couple of other articles we can chat about. John Rappaport is on the line, nomorefakenews.com, but johnrappaport.wordpress.com. Bookmark it. Check out John's writing. Support his work, folks. There's not too many, there aren't too many journalists like John left today. The you look at the football players, athletes and actors and actresses. We talked, we do a show once a month with Jamie Icke. Jamie does a program, and he talked about Morgan Freeman the other day and his beautifully recorded voiceover, John, about Putin. You know, you get Leonardo DiCaprio. A lot of these people don't realize that they are dupes. But can I ask you about the, you know, the Trump tweeting and the constant kind of tabloid behavior of Trump and others around him, and how the public are gripped by that? Is there an argument to be made that we're seeing a scripted reality TV show that we're all part of, like the Truman Show, you know, Jim Carrey, the Truman Show, Truman Burbank, that all of this Trump stuff, it's there to keep us reaching for the popcorn because it's a good laugh, Trump calling people names and all of that? Do you get the feeling that this is, you know, it goes even deeper than maybe we might think, that the Trump is not really just genuine, you know, eccentric maverick, that there's something more sinister going on in terms of how we're all being played? What do you think?
Well, again, I wouldn't focus on the tweets myself. I mean, yeah, I understand. I would start looking at things like, how come he surrounded himself in his appointments with Goldman Sachs people?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, now we're getting down to something real. And my response to that is, when he took office, or before he took office, excuse me, at some point, people came to him and they said, look, Donald, if by some miracle you become president, you're going to be presiding over the economy of America. That's your ticket. That's your, you know, ace in the hole. You're going to claim that you can bring back the economy and bring back jobs and float all boats and make America great again through the economy. However, you have to understand that there is a perception that one thing in America shows whether the economy is rising or falling, is succeeding or failing. And that thing is called the stock market. If the stock market keeps going up, you're going to have a whole lot of people on your side, important people. If it goes down, seriously down, you're going to be in terminal trouble and you won't be able to fight your way out of it. And as a businessman, you should understand this. You should know this. Now, we here at Goldman Sachs can give you a hand, Donald. We can help you out. because we know the stock market and you know the stock market is manipulated, and we have our hands and arms and elbows so deep in the markets, the trading markets, that we can go a great deal in the direction of sending it up or bringing it down.
Absolutely.
Now, what do you want to do, Donald? What kind of a deal do you want to make? There are things we want, and there are things you want. What do you say? And he thinks about it, and he says, let's make a deal. And they say, okay. For the time being, subject to change, we will keep the stock market up. You, in turn, will give us key positions in your administration, and you will follow certain recommendations that we have that may or may not be in tune with your agenda, such as continuing the war in Afghanistan. That's good for business, too. We may need you to do that. And if we do, you better be ready, because if you won't do it, you're going to suddenly see some real bad news in the stock market, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's the kind of thing that I would really be worried about with Trump.
You're absolutely right, John. 100% right. But I think, just to kind of minorly disagree with you, I think the tweets are to grab the TV-addicted nation who bought into reality television to keep them from understanding that the real issues are the ones you just outlined. I don't think this is natural, this Trump lunatic type behaviour, this funny behaviour with calling people names and all of that. I don't think that's just a consequence of his personality. I think it's deeper. It's designed to keep people from understanding that you've got your finger on the pulse, you know exactly what's going on, that he's a puppet, effectively, to further the agenda as far as he can take it until the next guy comes in. I totally agree with all of that. But I think this other type of behaviour, that's why I mentioned the Truman Show. I'll give you an example of that. I mean, you just talked about it there. Today, the Labour Party, the main opposition party in the UK, is in the middle of its conference. Now, you talked about manipulating the stock, and I'm so glad you brought this up, because the Labour Party's main finance man, the Chancellor, if they get elected, is John McDonnell. He said something very interesting today, John. He said, we believe that if the Labour Party gets elected, the deep state, the financial powerhouses of the deep state, will attack the economy to make us look bad if we get elected. And this was kind of a startling thing for a mainstream system politician to say. But he was right, of course, and you've written about it for many, many years. I've interviewed people, investment bankers on this programme, who described as eloquently as you how easy it is to manipulate currency fluctuations, to bring the pound up or bring it down, the dollar up, the dollar down. And McDonald was basically saying, if we get elected, and because they say they want to nationalise things, John, they want to take back into public ownership the gas, the electricity, the water, transport, they want to do all this. He said, if we get in, the financial creeps in London, in the City of London, will do their stuff to make things go south very quickly. And people don't know that. And I think all this Trump stuff, Kim Jong-un and all this, it's a deliberate little script there to keep us all, like, reading the celebrity magazines, so we're not getting what's really going on, you know? It's just my opinion.
Okay, well, I would go a certain distance in agreeing with you, but where I would take exception is in this case. At the outset, the first thing I said about Trump was, I like him for this reason. He's attacking the media. He's attacking the news. I don't care why. I don't care what his personal reasons are. The reason that I named my site 16 years ago, No More Fake News, was because between 1982, when I started working as a reporter, and 2001, I had seen time and time and time and time again that mainstream news was destroying people's minds, making them more stupid, lying to them, omitting vital data, keeping information concealed that would change the direction of history. And so when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this presidential candidate came along that had all this support, he started issuing these off-the-cuff statements and tweets and so forth, accusing the media and the news of being totally fake idiots and so on and so forth, calling them names, calling them out by name, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, keep doing it. All I can hope for is that if you're elected, you don't stop doing it, because as it turns out, no matter who's in the White House, the official organ of information, the eyes, ears, nose, mouth, you know, of the public has always been the mainstream press.
Yeah.
And somehow that has to be destroyed. That has to be taken apart. Independent media have to come to the fore in a way that they haven't before. So whatever he does on that end of the spectrum, as far as I'm concerned, keep on doing it.
Fair enough. John Rappaport is on the line, folks. Great to have John back. JohnRappaport.wordpress.com. That's the website. NoMoreFakeNews.com. Decades of journalistic integrity, telling the truth, putting facts together. Jesus, John, we live in a post-fact world now, don't we? As David has been saying, as I've been saying on this program, facts don't matter anymore. Well, they do on websites like yours and the programs you appear on. I was really interested in a piece you posted yesterday about open borders and how how celebrities, not just in your country but in this country here, all over the world, aligning themselves with various movements to open borders. You've called the article J.K. Rowling, Clooney and Trudeau put immigrants in your homes. It's terrific. Again, we should always be worried, shouldn't we, when something becomes, when something arrives and lands everywhere at the same time, there's an agenda. Why are all of these celebrities coming out to promote open doors policies for the movement of migrants? Why?
Well, some months ago, I heard David Icke, nail it completely when he was talking about Europe. He said, look, Europe is the cradle of liberty. It's the cradle of freedom. And to sort of add to that and paraphrase that, you know, where was the concept in the West of personal liberty born through centuries of struggle? So that divine right of monarchs was taken down off the pedestal, where the idea of the priest class or theocracy ruling countries was taken down off the pedestal, and instead, out of the guts and intelligence and vision of individuals, the idea of individual liberty took hold. Europe, that's where. So that has become the primary target of the open borders, Soros, globalists, that go much higher than Soros. Why? Because they want to destroy that completely. And their way of destroying it is to say, by the time we get through opening all the doors and letting all the millions and millions and millions of people in, there will no more be a recognizable Europe. And all of the traditions will be mere vague memories in the memory hole of history. They will be gone. First and foremost, liberty and freedom. So that's the operation. That's the operation in Europe, in the U.S., all over the world, wherever it can be done, wherever, but especially in Europe and the U.S., where despite all the problems, all the faults, all of the con games, all of the manipulation, you still see a remnant of the idea of personal independence and freedom and power. Come the celebrities. Bumpity, 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 bump.
Stampede.
Open the borders, open the borders, open the borders, open the borders. Okay, fine. Put them in your homes. What's holding you back? I mean, I don't understand. You know, if this is what you stand for and you're so, serious about it and so intent on it and so critical of anyone who doesn't want it, how come you're not putting, I mean, in the case of J.K. Rowling, who at minimum is worth $650 million, made $95 million last year alone. I mean, she could easily fit 500 of these, let's say, single male immigrants who are of fighting age in her homes.
Absolutely.
And live there herself with them, because she thinks it's a great idea on all counts. Well, let's go. What's holding you up? I mean, you know, normally we hope when somebody comes out and says, this is what I stand for, this is one of the great issues of our time, they actually back it up with action. And when they don't, it's certainly a signal to be extremely suspicious of what they're doing. At the very least,
virtue signaling is a big part of all this. You say that in the article, don't you? And you're absolutely right.
Here's my signal. Here's my flag. I'm waving it. I hope my friends get it and the people I really care about, so that they can, you know, signal back to me, and we'll signal to each other, and it'll be great. And the media will pick up on it, and they'll signal it too, and we'll all be happy, and we won't do anything about it. That's our game, folks. We love it, and that's the game we play.
We accept the most insane things. Not you and me, but I was laughing out loud some weeks ago. I was preparing this program, because it's a nightly program, so I'm preparing in the afternoon. I'm getting the audio clips ready for the monologue part of the program. I'm researching my guest. What has Rappaport been saying today? Finding out what he's saying. And I see Bono walk out of Emmanuel Macron's house. Now, I'm not an idiot. I know that people like rock stars and rock singers, and I know that politicians like to schmooze with them. But what was extraordinary to me, John, was Bono was in there for, I think, something around 3 hours. And when he came out, Bono conducted a press conference which was about his meeting with the French president. You couldn't make that sort of stuff up. There must have been a generation, you know, before my generation, that if you'd have said to them, prime ministers and presidents would be entertaining idiots like Bono for 3 hours, and then he would be conducting a press conference telling the press what they discussed. Hang on a second. You're a greatest hits 1980s rock star. What the fuck are you doing spending 3 hours with the French president? But we accept the insane now, don't we? As if it's normal, John. This is it's a crazy world, right?
Yeah, absolutely, sure. I was trying to imagine, because I'm, you know, a lot older, what that would have been like if, say, Frank Sinatra did that.
Yeah.
You know, Frank Sinatra meets with Eisenhower. And they sit there, and who knows what they talk about for a couple of hours, have a few drinks. And then Sinatra comes outside the White House, and there's a podium. And there's a microphone, right? And the press is all there. And he says, well, folks, I want to tell you what happened there. We had a very interesting talk and so forth. And all the reporters look at each other like, you know, are we on Mars now? Is he going to sing a tune? You know, where's the band?
Yeah, you know? But you had reporters, you see. You're the last of a dying breed. Again, you know, your time is certainly not done here. You've plenty left to contribute. I know you'll probably say, oh, I'm an old man, Richie, but you're not. You've got plenty to do.
No, I don't say that at all.
No, you're not. Your work is as relevant now and as articulate now as it ever was. But you are a little bit older than most of, you know, than me and than most of my audience. You do remember a time. I mean, you were one of them when there were journalists who went around with a notebook and a pen, and who did ask ballsy questions, and who did write stuff, and they wouldn't have tolerated that garbage. Question number one would have been, Mr. Sinatra, what the fuck are you doing here?
Yeah.
Number
would you
one,
explain
right?
Explain that? I mean, you know, are you on a drug of some kind? Are you delusional? Why are we here? What are we doing? You know? And then they would all turn around and walk away. And he would scratch his head and get on his jet and go back to Palm Springs, and that would be the last time anybody like that would try it.
Absolutely.
You know?
I mean,
it'd be ridiculous, you know?
You'd be like, Frank, please tell us that you're here to get a green card for that nanny that you're having an affair with.
Yeah,
please tell
right.
us that's the reason.
Something.
Not that you're discussing policy, you know? Oh, gee. Yeah. John, thanks for that time today. I really appreciate it. There's no brown nosing here. We love you and your work, and your articles are brilliant. I meant it when I said you are as articulate. In fact, I think you're sharper now than you've ever been, to be honest, as long as I've been reading you. NoMoreFakeNews.com, JohnRappaport.wordpress.com. Every day, insightful, thought-provoking articles asking the questions that sadly are not being asked by mainstream reporters anymore. Thanks for coming on. Like I said, Ikey sends his regards to you, David Icke, and I hope it won't be as long before we see you back here again.
Yeah, me too, to David. Thanks so much, Richie.
An honour, John. Thanks a million. Look after yourself. The great John Rappaport live on the line to us there from his home. That's nearly it for the programme. That went pretty quick, didn't it? Listen, Mikko Poletta's come back to me, and I'm a bit annoyed. And I don't want to be bad-mouthing Mikko at all, because I don't know him personally, but he's been on the programme before. But he sent me an email that arrived about a half an hour ago to say that his Skype is not working for some reason. Now, that was an hour after he was due to be on. So an hour after he was due to be on, he emails me to say, Skype not working for some reasons. I don't buy that. Because if Skype wasn't working, he'd have moved heaven and earth to let me know about it so that I could have phoned his landline or his mobile, because he's over here in the UK from the US. So I'm not buying that. I suspect, and if it's true, it's very sad. I'm not going to, like I said, I'm not going to badmouth him. But because David has been libeled and wrongfully accused of Holocaust denial by the Zionist clowns at the campaign against anti-Semitism, and because I've been accused of Holocaust denial by these same people. Now, obviously, I'm not David Icke or anything like it, but this programme has been accused of it. Gilad, who's a regular guest, has been accused of it. I wonder, because of the uproar over the comments made by Mikko, did Mikko decide, well, it won't look any good now if I go and speak to these guys, and they've been accused of anti-Semitism and that. If that's the case, it's dreadfully sad. And it speaks to what David said about this creeping self-censorship. Oh, I won't go and speak there because I might be accused of this or accused of that. I think it's sad. And that's all I'm going to say. You know, he was due on at 7:25 UK time. At 8:21 UK time, he lets me know that his Skype isn't working for some reason. That's bullshit. He made a decision sometime this afternoon that he wasn't going to come on the programme, and he should have fucking told me out of courtesy, because I could have arranged another guest or done something else. That's courtesy. He's well within his rights not to come on. Nobody has to come on the programme. You're entitled to change your mind, but grow a pair of balls and tell the presenter you're not going to come on. It doesn't bother me. I'm a vastly experienced broadcaster. I can speak for hours. I can bore the bejesus out of you for 5 hours if I want, but it's poor form. And if the reason is because he's been accused of Holocaust denial, well, it's even worse. I'm going to love you and leave you. Big shout out to David Icke for jumping in. Great to hear from David today, unexpectedly. And I love John Rappaport and his work as well. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Robert Greene returns to this programme. He'll be with me for the duration of tomorrow night's programme. It's going to be dynamite. You don't want to miss that. Robert Greene tomorrow. I'm going to leave you with John Farnham. Don't self-censor. Say whatever you want, when you want, and where you want. Don't advocate harm. Don't ask anybody to commit harm against anybody else. Don't incite violence, but say whatever the fuck you want. This is John Farnham. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye for now. Bye.